Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Bhakti Vaibhava ki jai. Grantara Shri Mahabharatam ki jai. Jai Girina Shri Maharaj ki jai. Jai Nitai Gopriman ki jai. Okay, so we got our KMB, the three memory verses for the next section, ready. Also, there is the open book examination topic. If you didn't get the open book examination topics for the final section of the sixth canto, you can see us after this class. We will supply them to you free of charge. And the KMBs for the next section, we have Brahma Samhita, verse 44. Brahma Samhita, verse 45. Brahma Samhita, verse 46. 44, 45, and 46. What's that? They are verses from the Brahma Samhita. You can look it up in your own time. I'll give you the numbers. So please share this with your friends, this information and knowledge. So tonight, we'll continue hearing of the pastime of Chitraketu Maharaj and his acceptance of the curse from Parvati and the response from Lord Shiva. And tonight we'll go from verses
26 to 33.
So if you have any questions or comments along the way, you can ask them. Personality of Godhead, Hari. They are great souls and are not interested in any kind of material happiness. Chaitanya Prabhu?
Lord Shiva, the husband of Parvati, told his wife, My dear Parvati, you are very beautiful in your bodily features. Certainly you are glorious, but I do not think that you can compete with the beauty and the glory of devotees who have become servants of the servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, Lord Shiva smiled when he joked with his wife in that way, for others cannot speak like that. The Supreme Lord, Shiva continued, is always exalted in his activity, and here is another example of his wonderful influence upon King Chitraketu, his devotee. Just see, although he cursed the king, he was not at all afraid or sorry. Rather, he offered respect to you, called you mother and accepted your curse, thinking himself faulty. He did not say anything in retaliation. This is the excellence of a devotee. By mildly tolerating your curse, he has certainly excelled the glory of your beauty and your power to curse him. I can impartially judge that this devotee Chitraketu has defeated you and your excellence simply by becoming a pure devotee of God. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Tararoki Sarisuna, just like the tree, a devotee can tolerate all kinds of curses and reversals in life. This is the excellence of a devotee. Indirectly, Lord Shiva forbade Parvati to commit the mistake of cursing a devotee like Chitraketu. He indicated that although she was powerful, the king, without showing any power, has excelled of our, by his tolerance. One thing to say, he never repeated it. And he happily accepted and discussed with members of our meeting. And with great respect and humility, he accepted everything. This is the greatness of a devotee. No retaliation, no anger, and so peaceful, and accepting what we ordered by the superior authority, in spite of being a pure devotee.
Very advanced state of consciousness. Any other points?
Can we can see Lord Shiva complimenting the quality of Chitrabhita rather than focusing on the faults of the devotee? The devotee is not always focusing on the faults.
Anything else?
I didn't get it.
You have to speak loud when you speak.
I mentioned that Lord Shiva, I think he compliments the quality of Chitrakirti rather than looking at the faulty side of it.
Any other points?
Many times we find that the husbands are very influenced by wife's opinion. So many times we find that the husbands are very influenced by their wife's opinion.
Real?
So many times the husband may not correct, let's say something has gone wrong and his wife, let's say, and I can talk on behalf of my wife, the Jamalila has not behaved with the devotee properly because of that there is some friction. Then usually the husbands by default tend to take the wife's side and then say that, oh, she should not have done it. But here we have seen that Shiva is not taking that the wife position.
I make it a principle I don't do that. I've made it a principle, I don't do that. And my wife doesn't always like it, but she respects it. She respects that position. Otherwise you just become henpecked. And you just become, yeah, all of the exchanges become mundane. A devotee has to stick by his principles. So if my wife is right, then I back her. If she's not right, then I won't back her. Okay. Sometimes it causes big problems, but so be it. Any other points?
What you are saying, that you are not a yes man. Yes, madam, no, madam.
Except when it comes to my wife, then I'm a yes man.
Was it very difficult to handle though?
What's that?
This particular scenario.
Marriage. It takes some years. Any other point?
It's actually in Kali Yuga the husband gets the thing from whatever wife does wrong, the husband gets it. So they better they better think with their head. That's what
it says. And that's why I'm praying. Any other points?
You know, I find the similarity even on the material plane. Mahatma Gandhi showed, though he was a weak person in stature or otherwise, but he tolerated the strength of British Empire. And by tolerating that, he has shown that he is more powerful than the British Empire, and ultimately they were driven out.
Although Prabhupada says it was actually Sichandra Bose who drove them out. He said it wasn't actually Gandhi's. Ultimately, he said it wasn't Gandhi. Even though Gandhi gets the credit in history, Prabhupada said it was actually the resistance army which drove them out. That was giving them more problems than Gandhi. I'm just saying what Prabhupada said. I wasn't there, so I don't know. Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said that. Anything else?
On the same point, Mahatma Gandhi was very rough with his wife.
Strict.
Very strict and rough.
Very strict.
In so many places.
Okay, so One of the principal points, next week I'll go over the principal points in this pastime, like that, I'll summarise them for you. But one of the principal points, which is coming out here, which is one of the main points of this pastime, is that Krishna is showing the super excellent tolerance of a devotee, which is one of the devotee's super excellent qualities. The devotee is able to tolerate any circumstance. And actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Trinada pi samichena, Parora pi samichena, you must become more tolerant than a little child who is talking too much. Who is that who is talking? So, Mahaprabhu says one must become more tolerant than a tree. So how can you be more tolerant than a tree? Because Mahaprabhu points out, or Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains in his commentary on Shikshastika, he says that the tree is unlimitedly tolerant because people will even come and they will cut the branches, they will take the fruits, they will sometimes damage the tree, but there is no protest because the tree is extremely tolerant. And a devotee has to be more tolerant than that. That's what Lord Chaitanya is saying, more tolerant than the tree. You can't be more tolerant than the tree. Practically, the devotee should be more tolerant even than the tree. So this is the extreme level of tolerance, and it can only come actually on the level of pure devotion. When one is extremely advanced in devotional service, then one will exhibit this kind of tolerance. So, Krishna, here, he is exemplifying, or he is magnifying this great quality. And he's explaining this great quality, and we've seen it displayed in the pastime or in the character of Maharaj Chitraketu, of how tolerant the devotee must become. So much so that even when Parvati comes to him and curses him, he actually goes to her and he thanks her for the curse. He says, thank you for this curse. I do not feel that there was anything wrong on my behalf, but still I am begging forgiveness from you for doing this. And ultimately he just accepts the curse, he doesn't even protest. So this is the pure stage of transcendental consciousness. And one of the main points of this pastime is that this quality is being brought out. So you have to test within your own character as a devotee how much you are progressing in this particular quality. Are you becoming more tolerant? Or do we react on every single circumstance that is presented to us? Whenever we get some slight or some minor discrepancy between us and another devotee, do we immediately go to the false ego platform? Or can we tolerate these things? So we have to see in our character, is this becoming more embedded within our character? Are we becoming more tolerant? And we're developing this superior quality. And we actually become transcendental. So Prabhupada explains in this section, we'll see how to do it. Because on the practical level, we have to learn how to do it. That's the Prabhupada, he will actually explain in this section tonight how to do this. But it is necessary for devotees to develop these qualities. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has pointed out that on the Ekadashis, which is today, then you should look at the 26 qualities of the devotee, and you should see how much am I progressing with these qualities. So you should see, am I, because this is the main quality that we're discussing at this point in time in this past, but am I actually becoming tolerant? Am I actually developing this quality? Is it becoming deep within me? Am I advancing in Krishna consciousness? Because to become tolerant, your consciousness has to be somewhere else. It's almost like Tomal Krishna Maharaj, he had a great deal of association with Srila Prabhupada, and he said it was almost like you felt Prabhupada was somewhere else. But actually he was. He was in another place. And it was like he was looking out at us. But it was like he was observing from another place. So because he was within that other state of consciousness, then Prabhupada would not react to what took place in this world. You wouldn't see Prabhupada become disturbed. He would always act perfectly. So this is how we become tolerant to what happens in this world. If our consciousness is situated deeply on a very deep platform with Krishna, then what takes place in this world, we don't react to it so deeply. Because we see this is just what's going on in this world. Yeah? But actually we're situated in a different state of consciousness, so we don't react to what goes on outside. It's almost like you're just observing what's taking place. This is the way the Bhagavad Gita explains it. This is transcendental consciousness. Yeah? Just like one time the devotees were going for a walk in the zoo with Prabhupada, and there was a lion in the cage, and the devotees were trying to get some reaction out of the lion. Yeah? And Prabhupada said, no, don't disturb him. So the state of consciousness of a pure devotee. He doesn't get involved in this world in a material way. He just stays aloof from it. Right? And he just observes it like that. We don't get absorbed in these things. We don't get into petty arguments with devotees and all these things. So then, Prabhupada is pointing out that we must be very careful not to offend the devotees. Right? And Shiva is saying to Parvati, indirectly, and also, you know, in a subtle kind of way, saying, be careful of this, Parvati. You know, be careful of dealing with the pure devotees like this. You've said something to Chitraketu, but actually it's not proper that you've dealt with him like this. So indirectly, the husband is saying to the wife, just be careful. Like I said to my wife today, she said something else, but just be careful. You know, because your mentality might go in the wrong direction. Okay. So, Shiva is saying here to Parvati, just be careful, you're dealing with a pure devotee here. You're dealing with Chitraketu. So keep your consciousness in the right, or stay in the right state of consciousness. Always be respectful. Even though sometimes even the more advanced devotees may act in a way that we can't understand, and which may cause some disturbance to us, but still we must tolerate that, and we don't lose our respectful attitude. Because Parvati, as soon as there was some smile on Chitraketu's face, then immediately she reacted and she cursed him. Shiva didn't react. Lord Shiva just saw, okay, there's some, you know, pastime is there that he's doing like that, but he did not react to it. So he's saying to Parvati, be very careful when you're dealing with these advanced authorities. Don't commit offenses to them. So Krishna, he always protects the devotees. You see in this pastime what takes place is that Chitraketu takes birth as Vritrasura. So for one thing, he's taken another birth, which is not necessarily a favorable thing. Most of us don't want to take another birth. But he has to take another birth, and he accepts that. And it's not even necessarily a good birth. It's birth in a demoniac family. So a devotee is always protected by Krishna. And Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee never will perish. So Krishna does not say that he will protect us on the material platform. Right? There's no promise like that in the Bhagavad Gita. I'll protect your material body, I'll protect your material assets, I'll protect your material circumstances. But Krishna says, I will protect you, which means he'll protect the soul. He'll protect the devotee. He'll protect your opportunity to do devotional service again in the future. So this is what's happening with Vritrasura. Chitraketu took birth, but he didn't lose his opportunity to be connected to Krishna. Even though the circumstance may have seemed unfavorable, but still, that was not lost. So Krishna will always protect that. And actually, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that there is no material circumstance which can impede bhakti. In other words, there's no situation in this material world that we can be placed in which can stop us from serving Krishna. What's a good example of that? There's many examples, but what are some examples of that? Prahlad Maharaj. Any other examples?
Like that Rogan.
Which one?
Rogan. That Rogan.
In what way?
Even though
it
was hunter and...
Okay, from that point. Yeah, that's good. Well, the example I was thinking, if you read that book, Salted Bread, you see the devotees, even though they're in such a difficult circumstance, but it could not stop their bhakti. Bhakti cannot be stopped by any material circumstance. Even though they're in the most difficult position, being persecuted in the most difficult ways, but the bhakti did not stop. So we really don't have any excuse. Sometimes we say, I can't finish my rounds, or this, or I can't do my service, or this or that.
But actually, nothing can stop our bhakti, our devotion, if it is strong, if it isn't sincere. Just like the Ganges cannot be stopped flowing to the ocean. It always gets to the ocean. So one who is a advanced devotee, his devotion cannot be stopped. He will always reach Krishna. Like that. Because that is the strength of his devotion. Any points?
About tolerance, I was thinking of Brahma Maharaj when he kicked Lord Vishnu's chest. Lord Vishnu asked him, did I hurt you? Extreme tolerance.
Can we say that always, Guru, because 200 years ago when Aurangzeb was the ruler of the Mughal Empire, he sent his soldiers all over the kingdom to see that anyone who is in practicing devotion activity, you tell them to stop and become a Muslim, or else they will be beheaded. And that's how he used to collect every day about 35 kilograms of the threads. And today, after 500 years or 400 years, we have got 500 million Hindus becoming Muslims. So, is it possible that every given situation that everyone can tolerate? So they were devoted at that point, but they couldn't tolerate the strength of all of this and the surrender.
Yeah, but then Sanatan and Rupa were also persecuted. But they didn't give up their bhakti. Haridas Thakur was also persecuted, but he didn't give up the bhakti.
But exceptions doesn't dispute the rule.
No, but then externally you go along with what takes. It doesn't mean internally you stop anything. It just means internally, then the devotion continues. That's all. Like Rupa and Sanatan, they acted externally like they were obeying the Muslim, but they weren't obeying. I mean, they were obeying him, they were cooperating with him, but internally, in terms of their practice, they kept just practicing their bhakti. So nothing can stop your bhakti, nothing can stop your... Isn't it also Akbar, he got married to a Hindu princess?
Caliber,
when it came to Aurangzeb, the situation was totally different. Right. I just thought of that example of Akbar. Didn't he marry a Hindu princess?
Yeah.
Was
it? Akbar was very favorite
with Vaishnava. Yeah, I think he actually married one of the Rajasthan princesses.
Yodhabai was the lady. And he made also the palace, which was all Hindu style. The keeper in a nice palace. It was Hindu style.
Yeah. I think he allowed her to keep performing her worship. Okay. Any other point?
No, you mentioned that Bhakti never stops. In what level of devotee level does it apply? Like, is it only for the pure devotees or is it for Madhyamadika level? Because we see many devotees look like very serious and all of a sudden, you know, they just leave the movement and practice. So, do we still understand that Bhakti never stops or depends on their faith? That they have only seen their own faith, so they...
Depends on each individual, my friend. Whether your Bhakti stops, that's up to you. No, it's the bhakti cannot be stopped by any material circumstance. But that's up to you. If you want to stop it, that's up to you. It means there's nothing material which can actually stop it. The only thing which stops it is your insincere desire. That's the only thing that can stop it. That's up to you. If you want to stop it, that's your problem. Does it make sense? That's up to you. If you want to worship Krishna tomorrow, that's up to you. If you don't want to worship him, that's up to you. That's your choice. That's all. Anything else?
Yeah. But Akbar's motivation was political. He wanted to spread his kingdom in such a way that Hindu, Muslim, everybody supports him. Motivation was not.
No, I wasn't saying that. I just thought I heard something about him. Anything else?
Akbar Mira too. One time Akbar came to meet Mira, and then Mira and Akbar they met, and he was glorifying Krishna consciousness. Akbar was glorifying Mira, and he presented some gifts and everything. He chose to give to lot of the deities. And then he didn't like, I think Rana did not like what Akbar did, because he was enemy at the time for the Rajput. So then it was very condemning Mira, one direction.
I read a quote by Radhanath Maharaj where it was written that one's greatness is known by his ability to tolerate provoking situations.
Yeah, that's what Prabhupada is saying.
I didn't follow.
She's just saying that it's being said here, Prabhupada says, just like a tree, a devotee can tolerate all kinds of curses and reversals in life. This is the excellence of a devotee. So a devotee is measured by how much he can tolerate. Okay. Devotees solely engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. KMB, which is KMB. Very famous verse. Okay.
Father, you might naturally have inquired how devotees become so exalted. Therefore, this verse explains that they are Narayana Param, simply dependent on Narayana. They do not mind reverses in life, because in the service of Narayana, they have learned to tolerate whatever hardships they may be. They do not care whether they are in heaven or in hell. They simply engage in the service of the Lord. This is their excellence. They are liberally engaged in the service of the Lord, and therefore they are excellent. By using the word brahatyanam, Lord Shiva pointed out that although Chitraketu provided one example of tolerance and excellence, all the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord as eternal servants are glorious. They have no eagerness to be happy by being placed in the heavenly planets, becoming liberated or becoming one with Brahman, the supreme effulgence. These benefits do not appeal to their minds. They are simply interested in giving direct service to the Lord.
What are the points? So,
in the last sentence here, it says they are simply interested in giving direct service to the Lord. So, devotees are more interested in serving the devotees of the Lord rather than giving direct service to the Lord. How do you understand that?
Same thing.
But direct means.
Yeah, same thing. Prabhupada saying that, but it can mean either. Either you're serving the devotees or you're serving Krishna, that's the same thing. Whatever you feel inspired to do.
Now after listening to Bhakti Shastri, but you are thinking of serving the devotees. But it used to be.
Yes, so Krishna will be happy.
In the previous verse, he says also, Tripti of the Jama, he is serving the Sahara.
Yeah, he served the Lord directly in the form of his deity, or he served the devotees in the form of the Guru and the Vaishnavas. So, Hari Guru Vaishnava Bhagavata Gita. All the same.
I remember my godbrother Stoka Krishna Prabhu, when he was under extreme pain in the last days, and he had cancer. So when Krishna Lila. In the past times of Radharani, he was taking him actually to Vrindavan. Maharaj said, now you meditate. And he said, no, I don't want to go back to Godhead. I want to come back and serve him. Even in that condition, he did not desire even Goloka. He just wanted to come back to Chaupati temple and serve Maharaj. And the same mood, Govind Prabhu also exemplified. When we were talking to him this year, he said that my whole life is this Sarabhupinath. I would come back here by comfortable. I don't have even a desire to give up my body in Mayapur. So this is where I want to go. So we have to come back and he lets him. Actually, there are two devotees who have spoken like this.
So, in this material world, we're being advised we have to simply tolerate whatever comes. So sometimes you'll be in swaga in this world. Swaga is there in this world. Prabhupada said, there's no happiness in this world. He said, maybe except for Hawaii. He said, otherwise there's no happiness. There's some places like swaga. There's a few places like swaga. So whether you're there or you're in hell, hell is on this planet as well. There's many places which are hellish like that on this planet. Or whether you're offered liberation, a devotee simply is interested in serving Krishna. So we have to tolerate. You're in happiness or you're in distress, you just have to tolerate. It's the same thing. I remember when we're brahmacharis, then this is early 90s, then the temple, we did not have a big congregation. When we had Janmashtami, just like now, how many people do we get? For the Janmashtami, we get maybe 8,000 or 10,000 people like that. But when we used to have Janmashtami, and then we used to have Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, all the devotees who would attend would fit upstairs in the prasadam hall, and we'd serve everyone else sitting down. So about 300-400 people would come back there. So in the early days, back in those days, there wasn't a big congregation to support the temple. So we had to support the temple by going and selling paintings in places like Africa, overseas, brahmacharis, like that. We had to travel. So we traveled one time, remember, we went to Africa. So Africa was hell. It was hell. Like I've seen hell on earth. You go to Africa, it's there. You can be right here on this earth. People, they're living in hell. So much poverty and so much, it's hellish the way they are suffering. And then we went to the Seychelles, which is one island off the coast of Africa, which was like heaven. It's where all the rich people go for their holidays. So it's like a heavenly place, beautiful place, so beautiful, it's like heaven. But because we were brahmacharis and we were serving the temple, that's all we were meditating upon, really. Whether we're in the hellish situation or the heavenly situation, we're just trying to raise money to keep the temple going. So whether or not the devotees are in hell or if the devotees are in heaven, they only have one business, which is to serve Krishna. So devotees don't make so much plan. We don't plan to go to a hellish situation. We don't plan to go to a heavenly situation. Just wherever we find ourselves, by Krishna's arrangement, then we just accept that. All the children are making too much noise. Which one is making all the noise? Is it you, Brenda? Who is making all the noise? It's not Brenda, but I'm just... It's okay, she can say that, but just tell her not to make so much sense. So, we don't seek out these situations. Wherever Krishna sends us, he sends us. Sometimes he'll send us to hell, sometimes he'll send us to heaven, but we only have one business, and that business is to serve Krishna, wherever we go. You see, Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada went to very hellish places, he went to very heavenly places, but he only had one business. Prabhupada said, I am like a cow. Wherever I go, I give milk. So it was Prabhupada's mood. Wherever he went, he simply just served Krishna. He just gave Krishna to others. Like that. He didn't have any other business or any other interest externally. So, any points? We went to all the rich people. That's all. We find the rich people.
Are they doing that rich people?
Yeah, but because
you can make more money quickly for some reason. Just the economy was like that for some reason. Maybe the exchange rates. I can't remember why. We used to like fly into a city, like we flew into Harare and some other places, Nairobi, places like that. So we'd fly in and we'd just walk down the main street of the city and we'd look for the biggest buildings and we'd just go to the top floor. And we'd walk in there because we're white, because nearly everyone there is black. The guy who runs the company, usually they're white, but everyone who works there is black. And you just walk in and they look at you because all the people working in, like the receptionists, usually they're the native people, the Africans, and they see you're a white guy, and you just you walk in, you just say, oh, I want to see the boss. And because you're a white guy, they just say, oh, you know, you say, oh, I'm such and such from Australia. So they bring the boss and say, oh, such and such from Australia is here. They go, who? And they say, you know, such and from Australia. Go, okay, send him in. So we walk in, put the paintings on his desk, roll out the paintings, just talk to him for like half an hour, and then he buys some paintings. You know, they have so much money, these people. Very, very wealthy people. So, sell paintings, then we just go to the next floor down, and we just work down the building from the top to the bottom. And then after about a week, because these were very cheap Hong Kong paintings, they didn't cost for it, but we buy them for $40 and sell them for $400. So after a week, everyone would find out they were cheap Hong Kong paintings. And they'd start ringing each other and they'd start saying, you know, have you seen these guys? And we had to get out of town. As soon as it got hot, we'd just get on the plane, fly to the next city, do the same, we'd just come in, start going up all the buildings. And then, a lot of stories. I could tell you so many funny stories. Really, made a lot of fun. And we just sent all the money back to the temple one day. Like some of the trips when the boys like Atul and Peter and Tridish, they used to go to Iceland and those countries. And they used to make a lot of money like that. Sometimes they send $10,000 a week, three of them back to the temple every week to send $10,000 back like that. That was always keeping the temple going back in those days. We had a lot of fun. I mean, the police got me one time because I was in Harare, I think it was. And, you know, we get all the money and we have to change it to US dollars so then we could take it and then bank it and send it back to Australia. Because, you know, the local currency is too much of it, so you have to get US. So we go down to the, there's one street there where all the crooks are, like all the, you know, the low class guys, and they change the money. So we used to go there because it was quick instead of going to the banks and everything because it takes so much time, we have to sign all the documents. So we just go down there. So I went down there, I changed the money, and I got the taxi, I was driving off, and the taxi driver said, someone's following us. You know, it was undercover cop, because he was watching me across the street, he saw me change the money. So then I drove around the corner, and I went to go to one other guy who I'd sold a painting to get more money. And then suddenly the cop walks in, you know, he says, right, you're under arrest. You know, so then I got taken, and he drove me around the corner, and they put me in the car. The car had no handle on, so you couldn't get out. So I was in the car, and then all the cops are in the car, undercover guys, and they stopped the car and they said, so what are we going to do? So I knew what they were doing, they wanted to get some bribe like that. So then I started, you know, I said to them, well, you know, I'm a priest, I'm a monk, and I'm just collecting all this money to send back to our temple. And so I got out of it cheaply. I gave them something, but they were happy. I had a lot more money on me than that, and I just gave them a lot of it. These were some of the events. We had a lot of adventures. I could do a whole class just on the adventures. All of this is, how would you say it? It's like a secret deal, like that. We don't talk about it very much, but we used to do all these things in the old days too. That's how the temple was run. You know, the brahmacharis were travelling around and making money and sending it back so the temple would keep going. Now these days it's good. We have a congregation, we have crossways, we have God piles. It's much more healthy now. Back then, these things weren't there, so we had to go out and cut it. But it was good fun. Sometimes we're in heaven, sometimes we're in hell. And that was good fun. Okay. So this is an important verse from the Bhagavad Gita, a famous verse. The devotee should meditate on this, because sometimes you'll be in heaven, sometimes you'll be in hell. right? But we just serve Krishna. Regardless of where we are, we serve Krishna. That's our business. Okay. We don't get caught up with the externals, because the externals change all the time anyway. Because of the actions of the Supreme Lord's external energy, the living entities are conditioned in contact with material bodies. The dualities of happiness and distress, birth and death, curses and favors, are natural byproducts of this contact in the material world. So Prabhupada points out that the pure devotees, they do not feel disturbed in contact with the material energy. And you'll see this at the moment. I'm listening to Hari Sori Prabhu's lectures. He has those different subjects which he covers. So the one I'm listening to at the moment is about health. So Prabhupada in regards to health. And he's covering for a couple of lectures just about Prabhupada's own health issues. And I had no idea how much Prabhupada was experiencing discomfort while he was preaching. So if you read the diary, the Hari Sori Prabhu's diary, you'll see how much difficulty actually Prabhupada was going through. Devotees didn't even understand it in his con at the time. They didn't understand what Prabhupada was going through continuously. He was suffering immensely in terms of his physical body. And Prabhupada said that if I hadn't have travelled so much, I would have lived another 10 years. Because he travelled around the world 14 times in those 12 years, then he was just pushing himself, you know, unstoppably. And then Prabhupada would even say, he would arrive at a particular place, and Prabhupada was not feeling well, and he said, okay, I don't want to preach to anyone. I just want to rest. Because, you know, people will always come and visit Prabhupada, and he's always, you know, preaching to people. So he'd say, I just want to rest. So then he would rest, and then the next day, then he would say to Hari Sori Prabhu, he'd say, where are all the people? And they'd say to Prabhupada, you said don't bring anyone, right? And then Prabhupada would say, no, I want to preach. So then when he was flying here to Melbourne to open the temple here in 1975, then he stopped in Perth on the way, and he was planning to have a break, or the devotees had planned that Prabhupada would have a break. So he got to Perth, and then he was there for one day, and then he said, where's the people? Start bringing people. So they had to go out and find all different people, and then start bringing them each day so Prabhupada could preach. So Prabhupada could not be stopped, his desire could not be stopped. His kidneys were failing. The doctor said actually that his right kidney had practically stopped.
Yep.
So that means he was in a great deal of pain, a great deal of discomfort. And 1 o'clock in the morning, normally he would wake up very early and he would begin his translation work. And sometimes his kidney was hurting so much he couldn't translate because there was just too much discomfort, so he couldn't concentrate on the purports. So then he would ring the bell and Hari Sori Prabhu would wake up. He was asleep. He would wake up and run into Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada would say, I cannot work. I cannot translate. I'm feeling too much pain, too much discomfort. And then he would just sit there for 1 hour at 1 o'clock in the morning and give a class to Hari Sori Prabhu and Pushpa Krishna Swami. They'd just woken up, jumped out of their sleeping bag, ran in, and then Prabhupada would just preach to them for 1 hour about what he was covering the Bhagavatam at that time. And then after 1 hour, he'd say, now go and take rest. So they would go and take rest again. So, you know, Prabhupada, regardless of what his situation was, he would just continuously push on and do his service. So he did not let any of the disturbances in the material world stop his preaching. He wouldn't let anything in the material world stop his desire to spread Krishna consciousness. So he's an incredible example, actually, because none of us could actually tolerate what Prabhupada was tolerating. You know, the amount of physical discomfort he was going through. And it did not stop him, actually. Continuously, he would just go on and on and on. One setback after another with his health, but he would just continuously go on. So we should take inspiration and example from Prabhupada. Example. Any points?
I was reading one book about Prabhupada's health. I don't know, it was about 200-300 pages, paper book. Yes. No. And it said clearly he had diabetic nephropathy and high blood pressure, and it was fluctuating like anything. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. that we have lost the subject. Diabetes is very big problem. And then kidney failure and blood pressure. I don't know how he was translated. Can you continue?
Yeah, it's incredible what he was doing. And then, like, the Ayurvedic doctor came to see him. And then the Ayurvedic doctor took his pulse and everything and then examined him. And then said, for 2 weeks, you have to just have boiled rice and boiled vegetables. No ghee, no salt, nothing like that. So then he walked out. And Harry saw it for Prabhu, because he travelled with Prabhupada for all of that time. He said that whenever Prabhupada got health advice, generally he would not follow it. He'd get advice all the time, but generally he wouldn't follow it. And even sometimes the doctors would come, and they would examine him, and then they would prescribe. They'd say, okay, you need this medicine. And then Prabhupada would even buy the medicines. He'd say to the devotees, okay, buy the medicine. You know, they say you need this pill. So Prabhupada would say, go buy it. And then when he left, Prabhu would say to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, are you going to take this? And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not going to take it. Even sometimes he'd buy it from them, he wouldn't take it. So the Kaviraj rice came and he said, you have to give up salt, you have to give up ghee, like that. For 2 weeks, just boiled, like that. So then he left. And then Prabhu said, Prabhupada, are you going to follow this? And Prabhupada said, my whole life I've eaten what I like. And he said, I will still eat what I like. He said, there is no ghee, there is no salt, there is no taste. He said, better I starve to death. And he said, boiled food is starving. So he said, I'd rather die by eating than by starving. So he wouldn't stop. So you're at the end. But then Prabhupada said, that is my personal opinion, or my personal desire. Like that. He said, I do not prescribe that for everyone. He's not saying everyone has to do that. But he's saying that for him personally, he would do. So that's the way Prabhupada was. So even in the end, like when the doctors were telling him, you have to do this, you have to do that, Prabhupada, basically, he wouldn't do it. Until the very, very end, the last final months, and he just stopped eating altogether because he couldn't eat anything. He was just having one of those like fitness drinks. I can't remember what it was called. It was just like, you know, the powders they put in, like gives you all the energy. He was just drinking that for about 3 weeks.
You know salt for digestion.
Yeah, it was like a Complan or something.
Yeah.
Called. Like a health drink.
Yeah.
So about 3 months he'd only drink that. And then his sister, Baba Tarini, Pishima, then she used to always like to cook for him. She used to come and cook for him, and then she would cook very, you know, Bengali style with mustard oil, and it's hard to forget. So even one time, Prabhupada ate what she cooked, and then Prabhupada couldn't digest it. So then he told the devotees, he said, tell her not to cook for me anymore, like that. And then she came into the room, and then Prabhupada had a big fight with her. She said, you know, she was crying and everything, you know, I want to cook for you and everything and like that. And Prabhupada was yelling at her. He's in my form, he's saying, go back to Calcutta and look after your deities. He said, go and cook for your deities. He said, you're not cooking for me anymore. Go back. Like that. So then she walked out the room, Prabhupada was yelling at her. As soon as she walked out and shut the door, Prabhupada just cracked up laughing. Right? And then he said to Harry, sorry for her. He said, she thinks she is my sister. He said, this is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas. Because the relatives look at you on a mundane way. He said, she thinks she's my sister, but he said, go back to Calcutta. So Prabhupada told the devotees, if she comes, don't let her cook for me. Then, when she came later on, she came to see Prabhupada. She walked in the room, Prabhupada said, they're not letting you cook for me. It's actually Prabhupada. He said, don't cook for me. He said, don't let her cook for me. And when she came, he said, they're not letting you cook for me. Like that. And then in the very final days, those very final months, Prabhupada, he hadn't eaten a thing for 3 months. He had nothing solid for 3 months. And then she came, and when Prabhupada heard she was there, she came in. Prabhupada said, I want you to cook for me. So she went to the kitchen, and he said to Bhakti Charuswami, who was cooking for Prabhupada, he said, take her to the kitchen, let her cook for me. So she went and cooked all the Bengali things and mustard oil and everything, brought it in. Prabhupada hadn't even eaten for 3 months. If you see the photographs, Prabhupada was very thin at that time. Right? He looks very unwell at that time. Prabhupada sat up and ate the whole thing. Ate everything. And digested the whole thing. He said, because he said she is a Vaishnava. He said she is a disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. She was his god sister. So he said, because she is a devotee, then I can digest everything. So Prabhupada was tolerating so much, that's the point. That's what's been pointed out here by Lord Shiva. In this world you have to tolerate so much. But your devotion does not stop, that's the point. Prabhupada's devotion did not stop. Even though he was going through so much difficulty, nothing stopped his bhakti. So that's the lesson that we have to learn from this. We have to tolerate whatever happens, good or bad. As one mistakenly considers a flower garland to be a snake or experiences happiness and distress in a dream, so in the material world, by a lack of careful consideration, we differentiate between happiness and distress, considering one good and the other bad. It's a very interesting purport. We'll read the second paragraph, because the second paragraph gives us the lesson how to tolerate everything in this material world. So, check out the book. Second paragraph.
The other example given in this verse is that a flower garland is originally very nice, but by mistake, for want of mature knowledge, one may consider it snake. In this connection, this is taken by Prabodhananda Saraswati. Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. Everyone in this material world is distressed by miserable conditions. But Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati is saying that this world is full of happiness. How is this possible? He answers, Yat Karunya Kathak Savai Bhavavatam Tam Bhavan Eva Sama. A devotee accepts the distress of this material world as happiness only due to the conscious mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By his personal behavior, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed that he was never distressed but always happy in chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. One should follow in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and engage constantly in chanting the Mahamantra Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Then he will never feel the distress of the world of duality. In any condition of life, one will be happy if he chants the holy name of the Lord.
So, it is said that this material world is only distress. Dukala yama shashvatam. It is only distress. But then, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur is saying, in this material world there is only happiness. So Prabhupada is explaining to us that there is only happiness in this world if we take shelter of the holy name. And actually, that was Prabhupada's own shelter when it came to his health. When the doctors, like Dr. What was that? Was it Patel?
No. Mr. Kelly.
Which one?
Bombay.
Ghosh was his friend. Yeah, but there was another one. Yeah,
Dr.
Bombay.
Patel.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a doctor also. So he used to associate with Prabhupada regularly. And he would always prescribe Prabhupada, you need this treatment, you need that treatment. And Prabhupada would always answer, the holy name is my medicine. So that was Prabhupada's formula, actually. He actually didn't take medicine, that was his formula. And he would just chant the holy name. And by doing that, he says, you only feel happiness in this material world. Even though this material world is only distress, factually speaking. There's nothing but unhappiness in this world. But if a devotee is taking shelter of the holy name, he only feels happy. He doesn't feel any distress. And Prabhupada is a perfect example of that, as is His Holiness Indrajumna Swami. Maharaj goes through so many difficulties. You read in his diary, so many difficulties, but he just takes shelter of the holy name, and everything just becomes very blissful. So that is the method.
Sometimes, you know, this medicine in our way, actually most of the times they are nutrients our body needs for function, so the car needs petrol and oil. You know, sometimes it's not, there's a place in the nutrients the body needs to run. Ayurvedic medicine is not actually the pill, like, you know, the today pharmaceutical pill. They're just really nutrients the body needs to run.
Yeah, we're not saying don't take them. Not that. We're just saying that the ultimate shelter is the holy name. That's the ultimate medicine. We're not saying don't take. Like, I'm taking Sitok, Paladi, Chirona, and Charan Prash. So, I mean, the Prabhupada was taking those things as well. So, not that we don't take them, but it's not the main thing. Not that. At the end of the day. Persons engaged in devotional service to Lord Vasudeva Krishna have naturally perfect knowledge and detachment from this material world. Therefore, such devotees are not interested in the so-called happiness or so-called distress of this world. Vasudeva Bhagavati. Very similar verse to this one. That for a devotee, automatically, knowledge and detachment will manifest in one's consciousness just by performing devotions. Whereas for the jnanis, Prabhupada explains in the purport that they have to practice a great deal of austerity to become detached from this world and to develop knowledge. But a devotee just does devotional service and automatically he becomes detached from this world and he develops perfect transcendental understanding and knowledge. That is the potency of bhakti, that you automatically get those two byproducts. And it says that jnana and vairagya are the children of bhakti. They're born from bhakti. So when you perform devotion, automatically you become detached. Automatically you develop a correct understanding of spiritual life. That is the potency of devotional service. You don't have to do anything extra to become detached. Neither I, Lord Shiva, nor Brahma, nor the Ashwini Kumaras, nor Narada, or the other great sages who are Brahma's sons, nor even the demigods can understand the pastimes and personality of the Supreme Lord. Although we are part of the Supreme Lord, we consider ourselves independent, separate controllers, and thus we cannot understand his identity. So Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport that only a pure devotee can understand Krishna. So how do we understand this? Because everyone on this list is a pure devotee, practically speaking. So how is it they cannot understand Krishna? So it's not that they cannot understand Krishna, but one way of understanding it is that they cannot understand Krishna in his highest form, completely. Just like Lord Shiva and Lord and Narada, they try to enter Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, but they cannot fully enter. They cannot fully reciprocate with Krishna in that way. Narada and Shiva, they both take forms of gopis. They both dress as gopis, but they have to stay outside of the rasa dance. They can't actually enter into the rasa dance. So Shiva is the guardian of the rasa mandala, and you see sometimes Narada is also dressed like a gopi. That's the closest he can get. He can observe the rasa lila, but he can't directly enter into it. So it's very hard to understand Krishna's pure pastimes in Vrindavan. Only by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers can we get some qualification or eligibility to enter those things.
What about Mother Lakshmi also? Mahalakshmi, she also could not enter in the rasa. Is that right?
Yeah, she became Sri Vatsa. She became, Krishna has a tuft of hair on his chest, so she became that whitish, goldish tuft of hair on his chest. Any points?
Because
is it,
can
you say
it, because they are not
Radha
Sutta devotees,
that they can enter the Rasa? Yeah, it's not their constitutional position. Like that. They don't have that type of, yeah, that type of right that the residents of Vrindavan. Okay, one more verse. He holds no one as very dear and no one as inimical.
He has no one for his own relative, and no one is alien to him. He is actually the soul of the soul of all living entities. Thus he is the auspicious friend of all living beings, and is very near and dear to all of them.
The Supreme Person is the Godhead, and his second feature is the super soul of all living entities. As one self is extremely dear, the super self of the self is still more dear. No one can be the enemy of friendly super self, who is equal to everyone. Relationships of CNS are enmity between the Supreme Lord and the living beings are due to the intervention of the illusory energy. Because the three modes of material nature intervene between the Lord and the living being, these different relationships appear. Actually, the living entity in his pure condition is always very near and dear to the Lord, and the Lord is dear to him. There is no question of partiality or enmity.
What are the points?
Is
he actually like that? As the super soul is equal to everyone.
The three modes are separating between super soul and us. Otherwise, we are very free.
Anything else?
Radharani is the highest devotee in spite of like Krishna and wife. So wife is not the highest devotee. So no comparison between the relationship.
One self is the body which is coming in between the soul and the super soul.
Yeah, so Prabhupada's emphasizing that we've developed enmity towards Krishna because of Maya, because of a misconception. We've turned our face away from Krishna, Bahir Mukh, which means we've turned away from Krishna. So there cannot be enmity between Krishna and us. Because Krishna never feels any enmity towards us. But sometimes we feel enmity towards Krishna. And why is that? Because we've chosen to be separate from him. We're misusing our independence or our free will. Instead of serving him, we're trying to compete with Krishna. And because we've become competitors of Krishna, then Maya is covering us, the three modes are covering us, the false ego is covering us, and we are thinking that we are something that we are not. So sometimes we feel enmity towards Krishna in our heart. Sometimes we feel some jealousy or some envy or some lower emotion or some lower attribute because we are not fully surrendering to Krishna yet. But actually there cannot be any enmity between Krishna and us. Krishna does not feel enmity. In this relationship the problem is us. Just like sometimes the husband and wife have problems in the relationship. So the husband blames the wife and the wife blames the husband. But I heard one nun, you know the nuns, they dress up in that white kind of dress. Right? She said the reason they wear that white dress, the nuns, is because they consider that they are the bride of Jesus. So they dress like that. That's why they always consider themselves like that. And this nun said that in this particular relationship, that's why they don't get married. They're nuns, because they consider their marriage to Jesus like that. And they said, in this relationship, we know that if there's a problem in the marriage or a problem in the relationship, we know the problem's with us. And that's actually the point, that all of us, if there's any problem in the relationship between us and Krishna, it's with us. Krishna doesn't have any problem. He doesn't feel any enmity towards us, but we feel something towards him. And that's why we're in this material world.
This is the same thing,
Prabhupada.
I never feel enmity with my hand, however painful it may be against a fracture or injury. I can never feel about it. Same thing with Krishna, because that's why it's far more possible. You can't feel it.
For example. Any other points?
Okay.
Prabhupada.
Yeah.